News Talk 790 WNIS with Hemp Haven Wellness. Dr. D in the studio. That's Dr. Denise Foster with more than 40 years of medical experience, more than 10 years of experience being a cannabis nurse. And I'm Lee Foster. No relation, but we've become fast friends, sharing our passion for cannabis and the legalization of such. And, well, the wide-ranging areas that people can use it, from recreational uses to medicinal uses, you name it. That's what the show is all about. Very, very special show this week because we have an announcement that Dr. D is going to make for us. We should just jump right into it. We should just jump right into the big announcement. As you know, Hemp Haven has been open in Chesapeake, 480 Kempsville Road. Now, I guess we're going to have to leave at Kempsville. We never succeeded in renaming it Hempsville for you. And you have a new location coming soon to Moyock, and you'll be moving down there.
Yes, we're open now. We're open now.
You're open today. You'll be over there today.
Be over there today after the show. Today is the only day, and I should say it's the last day, that you'll be able to get a cannabis nurse, a free cannabis nurse consultation in Chesapeake. We're going to have two locations operating for just about another month. A month from today. Goodbye, Virginia.
Goodbye, Chesapeake.
Goodbye, Virginia.
Yeah.
No,
Virginia.
I'm done with Virginia. The Virginia regulations have made it impossible. Well, if you've been paying attention to the news and the back and forthing at the state house with just the cannabis laws themselves, that doesn't even involve me. But they've extended down into me, into any hemp-based business in Virginia, and we're all suffering for it. I'll be the 10th business to leave Chesapeake, or to leave Virginia, I should say.
I guess it would be fair to say, you know, we're tired of Virginia. We're not tired of Virginians, because poll after poll continues to show that people support this.
Absolutely.
It's our leaders.
And even in North Carolinians, North Carolina is very deficient in their medical marijuana program. They are one of the strictest and very limited in the nation. A recent poll, as we have new administrations moving in everywhere, a recent poll down in North Carolina showed that 71% of North Carolinians recommend and accept medical marijuana as a premise. We have so many. We have 80 years of research, and this is the prohibitionist mindset. We talk about this on our radio, on our podcast. We have to congratulate ourselves, Lee. We just recorded our 52nd podcast. We've been doing episodes there last year for an entire year's worth.
We've made it a year. Cannabis Nurse Truths, the website cannabisnursetruths.com, and wherever you get your podcasts.
There is so much research coming out in all levels. And this is where it cannot be emphasized enough. All levels of research, because those of us who seek cannabis for what it does, either in the medicinal side, such as what I do as a practicing cannabis nurse, or in the industrial side, we have a lot of fibers, a lot of construction material. Just several years ago, the United States Department of Agriculture approved CBD, or I should say hemp seeds, as a chicken feed. So we have so much opportunity. And of course, the number one priority is safety. Safety in everything. Safety if we're feeding these seeds to your chickens. Safety if we're building materials and roadways and houses and bridges and things out of construction materials, hempcrete. Of course, safety if it goes in or on your body. That's the medicinal side. But the research is borne out, 45,000 plus research studies. With a high concentration of those studies just within the last decade, 90% of those 45,000 studies have been published within the last decade. And if you recall, President Biden in 2022 signed into law the Medical Marijuana and Cannabidiol Research Act, and this expanded research from the perspective that we're not looking at it as a drug of abuse anymore, a drug of harm. We're actually looking at it now for what medicinal properties or health benefits or other social benefits it could provide. And the research is overwhelming. I have no problem finding weekly Cannabis Nurse Truth podcast topics every day.
This is true.
It's a deep subject. There is so much to talk about. But the number one priority for everyone in this industry is safety. We don't want your kids taking our Halloween candy. We don't want to sell underage youth marijuana. These are the laws that have been incepted that we have to follow, and now we're following the processes.
So, Hemp Haven Wellness, today is the last day that you can get a free cannabis consultation at the Chesapeake location. It is, what, the first day that you can get one down in Moyock at the new location. And by the way, if you're not familiar with Moyock, it is literally right below the border. So it's not super far for anybody. If you've been going to the Chesapeake location, it's just a little bit further south. So it's not that much further you're asking people to drive. And it will be well worth it because this new store that you're opening up, it's going to be bigger, it's going to be better, and it's going to give you more room to do a whole lot more things, right?
We have so many plans down there. I don't want to share all my secrets right now, but this is what I wanted to do 5 years ago when I opened Hemp Haven. And it took me a year just to find a location, and this was going into the COVID pandemic. So this is considered 2019.
Yes, opening a business in the middle of a pandemic.
It was not fun. I'm going to share my story here in a second, but the issues and the roadblocks and the speed bumps, it's been just a headache after headache from the beginning. But I expected that. I knew what I was signing up for. What I didn't sign up for was the government of Virginia to go backwards. Not only is the government of Virginia not following the law as written in the marijuana side, because in 2021 the law was written that this will be enacted within 2024. The laws that are now regulating the hemp industry in Virginia are contradictory to the federal laws that the other 49 states are following.
Yeah.
And so it is for that reason that none of us in Virginia can follow the law, because the products are not made like that. And Virginia's regulations have not taken into consideration these science-based issues. When I asked about these regulations, they refused to tell me who incepted them. I asked, was there a committee? Which committee of cannabis experts? Which committee of scientists or research or healthcare professionals or agricultural professionals made these decisions? No one would answer me. So this is the ignorance at all levels of bureaucracy, which
for,
is what
for
we're...
For example, the arbitrary number that it has to be, what, 0.3% or less of THC in something, which is just a made-up number.
That's a federal regulation. That's a federal regulation regarding the hemp laws. And when we finally dug into the records, the regulations as they rolled through to be where they are now, someone asked, well, where did you come up with a 0.3 number? Because like the 25-to-1 ratio incepted in Virginia, I couldn't find that research. These people couldn't find, and neither could I, as I've looked. No one can find where the 0.3 came up, because it is nowhere listed in research. Other countries, I believe it's somewhere, some countries in Spain, Europe, I believe in Italy, they use 1% THC. We just picked 0.3 as an arbitrary number. So it's all smoke and mirrors when you're thinking about cannabis, and they're terrified. They're terrified. They're terrified because the science is just so overwhelming. The more research that we are now doing regarding what these compounds can do, either in the medicinal side, the health and well-being side, and when I say health and well-being, I mean mind, body, spirit, and then, of course, the industrial side, that is also taking off because hemp can replace almost everything in industry except for, you know, steel and things like that, the heavy metals that you need for their consistency. Reports are coming out. 1 in 10 Americans are now using CBD. 1 in 10 Americans are now using CBD for some type of protocol. And a new research study just came out that says CBD can be a very useful addition to sunscreen, hair care, and wound healing products. Because it has medicinal benefits. So wound healing, it's antibacterial, antifungal, and antiviral. We have research that shows CBD prevents COVID-19 from getting into your cell, making it an antiviral. It also blocks malaria. It works with HIV. It works with RSV. It works with so many hepatitis. It works with many different viral infections, antibacterial, antifungal. As a sunscreen, it is an antioxidant. It protects against oxidative stress, that stress that your skin gets as it's encountering the UV ray of the light of the sun. And in hair care, in shampoos and in conditioners, because CBD, again, we're back to the skin on the scalp, but it also supports the proteins and the nutrients that are necessary for hair health. This is why they're scared.
Yeah.
This is why they are scared. As we begin to put CBD in lotions and hair care and wound care and sunscreen, as we begin to use CBD to replace, I could just say everything, anti-cancer, antibacterial, antiviral.
You bring up sunscreen, but Banana Boat and Copper Tone are not just going to stand by.
No.
They're going to fight back.
Well, or they're going to implement it into their sunscreens.
Yeah.
Easy to grow. Hemp is easy to grow. It's a commodity.
That's true too.
And it's in rich abundance now that we have thousands, millions of hemp farmers growing tens of millions of hectares of hemp. I got into this business recognizing that it was going to be difficult. And I never really understood the magnitude of prohibition until I got into this business. I was very happy being a nurse. I'm going to go into my diatribe now because, of course, as I count down 30 days from today, and I'm kissing Virginia goodbye. It's a chef's kiss. It's mwah, goodbye. I have this reflection that we're making a positive move in cannabis because cannabis is just getting extremely out of the box, and you can't look past even the federal level with now President Trump, who had already remarked on it when he was a Florida resident and he had to weigh in on the medical marijuana amendment, Amendment 3 in Florida, that would allow adult legalization. It didn't pass in Florida, but that was something that President Trump, who then that time was a candidate, had to weigh in on. And remember, it was the first presidential election that was historically is historic for cannabis because both presidential candidates were supportive of it.
Yeah.
Then just this week, we had Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s hearing and confirmation as Secretary of Department of Health and Human Services. This is huge for cannabis, and it's kind of low-key now, and all of the cannabis bros that I follow on the social medias, they're all going, wait, guys, the message is clear. We have a positive cannabis administration, but more significantly, we have Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who's going to be looking at a lot of different things, whether you love him or hate him. He does take a stance on pharmaceuticals, and 100% we need to understand why so many Americans are using these harmful chemicals. I think it's so ironic that they try to demonize cannabis at some points with synthesized compounds. For instance, synthesized means that you're creating it. Semi-synthesized means that you're creating it from something within the plant or within the compound. And then, of course, natural, organic means 100% from the compound, from the organic plant. Well, everyone forgets, and we've been conditioned almost, that pharmaceuticals are nothing but synthetic chemicals. Petrochemicals, I should add. Petrochemicals that were popularized by a man named John D. Rockefeller in the 1930s. And so we have millions of Americans using synthetic chemicals, petro oil chemicals, that are going into the body. And we wonder after 40 years why people are sick and chronically sick. When I began my journey as a nurse, I started at ODU with the starry-eyed, I'm going to help everyone. Everyone's going to get healthy because that's what nurses are programmed. We're conditioned to do that. That's
absolutely
what we're educated and trained.
Right.
Went and did bedside nursing for a while, became a cardiac care nurse, and I love the cardiac care. I was at Chesapeake Regional before it was regional, and I was in their cardiac care step unit before there was even such a thing in the 1980s. So it's been a long journey for me to move from what I saw at the bedside. Individual care. Nurses excel at individual care. And then I moved into the population. And what struck me in the 1980s, as I moved into community health, into the population health, I was in home health and hospice care during the AIDS crisis in the 1980s, mid to late 1980s. And so, of course, I saw a lot of my home health patients in Ghent at that time, which was a very large homosexual, gay, LGBTQ community.
Sure.
And I was one of the first nurses in the United States to be certified by the NIH to insert PICC lines in the home. If you don't know what that is, those are the long lines that go up in the arm and into the heart. And we were doing that at that time because people in the HIV diagnoses and stage age diagnoses were getting kicked out of the hospital so quickly because we weren't sure how it spread.
Yeah.
But during that time, my patients struck me unusually odd because they were receiving monthly tins, monthly containers of marijuana cigarettes rolled for them and dispensed to them by the National Institute on Drug Abuse. Mm. Back to the 1970s, when Robert Randall won his Supreme Court case to use marijuana for his glaucoma, arguing at the Supreme Court successfully that if he lost his sight, he would lose his right to pursue happiness, and he won his case. And it was from the Supreme Court case in the 1970s that the compassionate use program was incepted, meaning that if you had some type of disease, disorder, end stage, quality of life disorder, you could sign up to receive monthly tins of marijuana cigarettes grown for you at the University of Mississippi on the National Institute on Drug Abuse's farm. And it was very odd. It was a very odd time, very sad time for me during that 1980s as I first hit my wall, my shock that we don't treat our patients very well. First of all, we're kicking them out of the hospital. They're extremely sick. We have very limited resources for them in the community. Here I am putting in long IV lines in the community. While I was trained to do it, and I did it to the best of my abilities, I knew it was a risk. You know, this should be performed in a clean, sterile environment, not in a home. But what was more odd to me was that while they were using their oxygen, I would have to turn their oxygen off so that they could light up their marijuana cigarette. Thinking to myself, if I'm inhaling any of the smoke while they're using this, and if I have to get tested, I might lose my nursing license because I'm not allowed to use it. I would be brought up to the Board of Nursing on moral turpitude. So fast forward, and I eventually became an administrator. I did quality assurance. I did the QI record review, so I had to deal with the insurance people. That was a time I'd like to forget. And because most of that was under the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare, auditing was de rigueur, meaning that, you know, every quarter I'd have to be looking at an audit and have to get all my documentation, all my nursing staff, to make sure that their documentation was up to speed. Then I moved into teaching. Ugly profession itself. I'm not a big fan of teaching as far as the administration. We're seeing this crisis now in the Department of Education in the primary field. It's no better in the secondary education. I became a glorified English teacher. And I argued with not only administrators, but I argued with students who thought they knew better than me, a nurse of 40 years, because this is the personality that is now in the millennial generation, that they have the knowledge, they know everything, that they're going to become a nurse for reasons that go beyond altruism. I became very disillusioned with teaching, especially around here. I haven't found, except for the colleges, of course, I got my PhD at Regent University. Wonderful program. I got my PhD in distance education, which is why I'm able to now teach online. I teach for several international colleges in graduate and undergraduate school, but I also have incepted my own cannabis college. I run my Cannabis 101 course, and I've done that now for 3 years. I'm in the middle of it right now. We do a Cannabis 101 distance education, 6-week program for geared for health individuals, because health professionals need to understand that this is in their communities now. I did that based on the fact that I have built course curriculum for now 20 years. I've been a nursing professor for 20 years, writing my own courses and teaching those courses. And now I'm in cannabis teaching, and I can't be happier because nurses are ready to make that transition. I made that transition over 10 years ago. I used to teach pharmacology, study of drugs, and I always taught my nursing students this was a drug of abuse until I discovered the patent. A friend of mine turned me on to the fact that the United States Department of Health and Human Services was awarded a patent in 2003 for cannabinoids such as CBD and THC and all the other 150 or so that we've discovered so far as and antioxidants and neuroprotectants. In 2003, the department for which Senator Kennedy now leads owns the patent on cannabis as medicine. Going back to patents that were awarded as far back as 1942, and that patent in 1942 awarded to Dr. Roger Adams was for CBD. It blew my mind that since 1942, we've known what CBD can do. Forget about THC. THC is our bad boy. THC is what our government holds over our heads and gaslights us with to say, oh my gosh, it's terrible. Reefer madness in the 1930s is what started the prohibition movement because of the THC molecule, which has been proven to be 100% safe up to a dosage of 280,000 milligrams. We recommend a standard unit dose, which is typically enough to create an effect, meaning you want the effect for pain, you want the effect for relaxation, or you want the effect for sleep. The standard unit dose has now been determined at 5 milligrams of THC. The science is overwhelming. And when I began, I'm a research nerd. I love the research and I love to implement the research because one of our tenets in nursing practice is evidence-based practice. We take what we read in the sciences, what we read in the research, we watch the trends, we watch for safety, we watch for risks versus benefits. And one of the tenets of nursing is we apply that evidence into practice. So therefore, if you take all of these 45,000 plus studies done over 80 years of cannabis research and you apply that into an individual, things happen. And that's what we began to see at Hemp Haven over the last 5 years. But when I began this, we only had medical marijuana. In 2014, Proposition 215 was the beginning in 1996 of California. So since 1996, we've had medical marijuana, and we have a majority. We have 35 states, or 37 it might be, that have medical marijuana, and 23 states that have a legal adult use program. But we have Virginia, we have legality in Virginia, but no adult use program. So they throw that in that side.
We're the only
stepchild
where we're stuck in between.
We get those questions all the time. We get people from out of town coming into Hemp Haven going, I thought it was legal. I'm driving around. I'm looking on Google. I'm looking for the open dispensaries. Where are they? And we say, well, you were lied to by our government. You were lied to. And we're all stuck in this medical hostage situation. Because while it was in the law to incept the programs and it was made legal by a majority of Virginian voters, our administration continues to prohibit it. Despite the fact that we have two of our elected officials trying to push that through just now, and it's going to get vetoed. So Virginia is just backwards, period.
And it's so confusing. It's as if our transition into legalizing cannabis encountered a weird loading error at 50%.
That's right. You're stuck.
Yeah.
You're just still loading. It's buffering. Yeah. When are we going to load?
The wheel just keeps turning over and over.
When are we
going
to load it up?
Right.
When are we going to load it up? There's another cannabis pun. When I began working with first the research, I was blown away that I had been lying to my nursing students for 20 years. What? You've told me, and I believed you, government, that it's a drug of abuse. It's just say no to drugs. I grew up in the Reagan era. We all remember this is your brain on drugs, right? The fried egg.
My generation had DARE.
You had DARE,
yeah.
Right? So all of these were based on the fact that it's really a model based on alcohol.
Yeah.
Isn't that ironic?
Yeah.
That our government in Virginia is the biggest drug pusher already because they push a very dangerous drug that our Surgeon General has said is the third leading cause of preventable cancer, and it remains the number one cause of traffic fatalities year after year, despite all of the laws, all of the regulations, all of the age gating. Our governor last year signed the to-go cup law.
Right.
We can to-go cup with our alcohol now, but cannabis is the problem. As I dug into the research, and I served It was a wonderful time for me to serve on the board of the American Cannabis Nurses Association, at which time everyone that was serving on the board of the American Cannabis Nurses Association was asked to contribute to the first cannabis handbook for nurses. And that was published in 2021, and I was tapped to write the chapter on the endocannabinoid system for the human body and how that works when these cannabinoids, such as CBD, or our body's own cannabinoids that mimic, say, THC or CBD, interact with the human body. And I could not believe the health benefits just from the research. And I'm going to say some medical things, because I'm not supposed to say anything that CBD or THC can do, that cannabis can do for medicine, because that's an FDA prerogative, right? Constitutional, bureaucratic institution is now in control of the pharmaceuticals that you put in your body because they're made of chemicals and they can do harms. And that entity that was non-elected believes that they can override a natural plant that has been used as medicine for 6,000 years. Because I read the research that showed cannabis cures cancer. I read the research that says cannabis cures diabetes, brain trauma, neuropathy, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis, reflex sympathetic dystrophy, asthma, tuberculosis. I can go on and on and on.
Probably be easier to just give us a list of stuff it
doesn't do. I'm looking for that. It doesn't do, because between autism spectrum, PTSD, these compounds have the potential to fix the body and prevent disease.
Therefore, you can treat multiple things at the same time.
That's right. The side effects is that you're treating other things beneficially.
Right.
That's why the government owns the patent on it. And you take this research, and I could not believe this. So my first encounter was with medical marijuana. I was consulting with patients who were using medical marijuana across the country. So this was the before Zoom era. So I was, if I remember correctly, I think I was using Skype, because that was the best mobile technology, virtual technology we had at the time.
Amazing that Skype isn't the one that took off during
it
the
is,
pandemic,
because
right?
It was a wonderful, it was a wonderful app.
Yeah, they blew it. Anyway.
I was meeting with medical marijuana patients across the country, and I had to do that because they would go to their medical marijuana dispensaries, and the only individual there to counsel them or to suggest or recommend a product was the 21-year-old bud tenders. And so when they would ask the bud tender, that's probably hyperbole, but the point is that these bud tenders, that's what they're called, bud tenders, they're not medical professionals. They can't. You're asking them about drug-drug interactions. I'm taking, cardiovascular drugs where we know that there's a concern. The bud tender is going to say, "Oh, well, just be easy on yourself, right? If you have a problem, just stop." That is not medical marijuana. And so that's where I began. And as I worked with medical marijuana patients, they loved what the medical marijuana did for their disease process. They hated that they had to get stoned for that to happen.
Yeah.
Because they can't function stoned. So I worked with medical marijuana patients for about 3 or 4 years, and then suddenly President Trump in 2018, in his first administration, signed into law the 2018 Agriculture Improvement Act, among which we call it the Farm Bill. It legalized hemp. It pulled hemp off of the prohibition list that where it sat with its cousin marijuana. And when they did that, I went, "What? I know what I can do with this. I don't need to open a medical marijuana clinic. I don't need to get in marijuana business. I can now open a hemp dispensary, because I just need the compounds that may or may not include THC.
Right.
The people using these compounds for the last 5 years that are not THC are the ones that have cured their cancer, cured their brain trauma, reduce their neuropathy, or completely eliminated it. They have been treated to the point where I have people now coming in saying, "I'm going in for surgery," and I've already told my surgeon and my healthcare team that I'm not using narcotics. So set me up with a plan for pain treatment before, so I can get some CBD maybe before surgery, to help reduce some of this inflammation that's associated typically, most of it's orthopedic surgery, with this inflammation causing my pain. And then that way, when I come out of surgery, I'll have a better profile, a better response for the inflammation, as well as I can treat my pain without using narcotics. And they've done that successfully. And that's our role as cannabis nurses. When we first started with medical marijuana, the cannabis nursing organizations were like, this is great. We're going to get jobs at the medical dispensaries where we should belong to counsel and recommend products safely, guide patients, drug-drug interactions, harm reduction, where to start at your dose of THC so you're not unsafe. Because I have old ladies coming in going, I got this at the Virginia Medical Marijuana Clinic, and they told me just to take a whole gummy, and I couldn't get out of bed for 2 days without feeling that I was going to fall.
It may be medical marijuana, but it's not administered in a medical way. And therefore, people don't understand the effects of what it is that they're getting themselves into.
This is why we need educated professionals.
And this is what you do.
This is why I created the Cannabis 101 class, yeah, available on Eventbrite. I've been running for 3 years. We need to educate our population. And that's why when I left my medical marijuana consultation business, I opened Hemp Haven. I don't need a doctor. I don't need a hospital. I don't need an insurance company. You don't need a prescription. I don't need a DEA registration.
Right.
And I don't need insurance. And you come in and you talk to with for free. We've had people come in talking for free just to say, I'm interested. Tell me. I'm not sure. Make a decision for me. Help me decide. This is where cannabis nurses were hoping that we would be instrumental in making sure that medical marijuana was launched appropriately. Every cannabis nurse that I was in collaboration with got fired from their medical marijuana dispensary. Why? Because we didn't fit in their budget. Okay, we can pay a bud tender a minimum wage, whereas a cannabis nurse is a profession. Because in 2024, cannabis nursing became the newest subspecialty. When I opened Hemp Haven, it took me a year to find a place that would even allow me to rent. Then I opened right at the start of COVID in March of 2020. It took me 6 months to open because COVID. I operated during COVID. In that time, In the first year that I was open, I was debanked twice. The first time was on Good Friday. Bank of America called me up 15 minutes before I opened and told me they were closing my account then and there because I was a high-risk prohibited entity. I moved my bank account to my personal bank, Navy Federal Credit Union, who assured me that they would be happy to take my commercial business. They closed me 2 weeks before Thanksgiving that year, calling me a high-risk prohibited entity. And when I had a mentor working with me, and after about 6 months of commingling my accounts, then I said, if I can't find a bank to take my commercial business, what happens? She said, well, you didn't hear this from me, but you're going to have to launder your money, is basically what she told me. This is the gaslighting. We're dangerous and prohibited because we're gaslighted as an unsafe prohibited entity. And we can't bank. And that's true also of the cannabis community. You've probably been hearing Senator Tim Scott from South Carolina holding hearings about that. That happened in the crypto world. It happened to conservatives. And it also happened to us in the cannabis world, including me. My insurance rates in Virginia are double. We have been robbed twice in Virginia. What did they take? They took my products. And one of those individuals was a felon. It was his seventh felony. We are attacked, and it was 3 years ago, mercilessly, because of what we do. And we're here trying to heal people. We're not trying to make you unsafe.
Yeah.
3 years ago, I worked to find another location, knowing how successful we were at helping people heal and prevent and transition from harmful substances like tobacco and alcohol and other harmful prescription drugs. It took me three years to come to the conclusion that no one in Virginia would rent to me. Every single development and free commercial property turned me down. Think of what you're seeing now, the upside down world in the commercial real estate market. No one will rent to me. No one will rent to me.
Meanwhile, we have smoke shops popping up everywhere.
Absolutely. That's fine. Tobacco and alcohol are fine. Yeah. And you can buy your Monster and energy drinks, which are 200 times the recommended caffeine limit, that are destroying kidneys and causing death because of this caffeine effect on the heart. No. I just can't understand it. It's mind-boggling.
They won't rent to you, despite the fact that you're selling compounds that are legal. And for whatever reason, there's enough people in this world that think that just because something is legal, it shouldn't be treated as such. They're going to continue to bully.
We've been so programmed to accept synthetic drugs as the answer. One of the disillusionments I had to make my decision, my final decision, the final nail in the coffin, so to speak, was I realized during my nursing practice in the community, I was a drug pusher there. I was just pushing their drugs, their chemicals. And no one got off the merry-go-round of medicine. They only got more complicated and more drugs. And by the time I left my community practice of pushing their drugs, every single one of my patients was at least on 10 drugs as a foundation. You had your anti-anxieties, your anti-hypertensives, cholesterols, you name it. These were the standard issue drug base. And then you begin to add disease processes on top of that. We push drugs and we've normalized that you're using chemicals. Read the back of your Tylenol. Even the melatonin that we buy at the pharmacy shelves is synthetic. It's made to mimic what melatonin that you make does to help to get sleep. That's why, again, we're back to the FDA. Why do people, when I tell people that the government has the patent on cannabis as medicine, well, first of all, they're like, how can you patent a plant? Well, they didn't patent the plant. They didn't patent cannabis. Recognize that. They patented cannabinoids, what comes out of the plant. It's a chemical structure. And for this reason, in 1985, the FDA removed Marinol, was petitioned and removed Marinol. Marinol is synthetic THC. So in 1985, Marinol was placed on Schedule 3. Because it is synthetic THC, and the FDA approved it in 1985 for the purposes of treating chemotherapy-induced nausea and vomiting. But my patients hated taking Marinol. Why? Because it's pure synthetic THC.
Right.
While it takes away their pain, their nausea, helps them sleep better, it also made them super stoned, just like they did in the medical marijuana communities that I was working with. Here's the hypocrisy. The government has not only holding the patent on these compounds as medicine that I sell legally, but they're just derived from hemp. They also have FDA-approved drugs that are based on these compounds. Epidiolex is another one. Epidiolex was FDA-approved in 2018. It is semi-synthetic CBD given to children over 1 year of age for their uncontrollable seizures, because we can cure seizures too with these compounds. But they don't want to tell you that. So since 2018, even a synthetic CBD has been patented and been using for children who are typically uncontrollable. I see there's a caller there. I want to take Fred's call if we have time, but I'll finish my story by saying that we're leaving Virginia because Virginia has treated us extremely poorly.
It's left you.
They have not welcomed us as a business, providing lots of tax revenues every month in their sales taxes and in their quarterly state taxes. I pay my taxes. In fact, last year, the Virginia Department of Taxation notified me that I would be undergoing a 3-year tax audit of my financial records. From January to last August, I underwent a 3-year Virginia Department of Taxation audit, and I came out clean as a whistle. So I'm not worried about my taxes. I pay them. I have been 100% transparent and legal, but yet Virginia, I will be the 10th hemp business to vacate Virginia, close down my business because of the way Virginia has treated us. I'm a healer. Everyone in my shop who works with us and practices with us is a healer. We want to heal you. We want to keep you safe. We want to keep you from harm, but we also know that these compounds are very effective when applied and recommended appropriately, and then guided and coached. That's one of our roles as a cannabis nurse, is to coach you. We educate, advocate for safe usage, and then we coach you through this process, because it is a process, because this is called individual medicine. You are not a bell curve. Pharmaceuticals are based on a bell curve. It's why there's 1 to 2 Tylenol, helps most people, but you might be on either side of that bell curve. Cannabis is an individual medicine, which means that we need to meet one-on-one, which is why free cannabis consultations have to be begun with education in our healthcare community. So we're in Omoyoc. We're there. We are ready to serve the Hampton Roads community, and we have even bigger plans coming up because, of course, going through Omoyoc, that's the gateway to the Outer Banks. You can't get to the Outer Banks with going through Omoyoc.
That's right. Go see Dr. D. She'll be there today from 11 till 3. The new location, 726 Carrituck Highway, Highway 168 in Omoyoc, North Carolina, just below the North Carolina-Virginia border, minutes from the border station. Everybody knows where it is. Easy to find. And that new location, it's in the shopping center where there's the food line, and I think there's a Burger King right over there, maybe a Sonic, and then there's... AJ Gators is over there.
Yes, we're under the Graham's Collision Auto Sign.
There it is.
Graham's Collision Auto Sign.
And I saw your new, I drove down there a week ago and I saw your new sign.
Yes.
On the building too.
Our current shop in Chesapeake is sending people down there, and I'm asking, how long did it take? And they're like, 10 minutes.
Yeah.
No problem. Now, I can't guarantee that because we're going to have tourist season starting soon.
And you're still doing delivery too.
Yes, still doing delivery.
So just to let everybody know, new location, 726 Carrituck Highway, Omoyoc, North Carolina. Dr. D will be there today, 11 to 3. HempHavenWellness.com is her website. Let's hear from Fred in Virginia Beach, who joins the show. Hello, Fred. Good morning. You're on WNIS with Dr. D.
How you doing?
What's going on, buddy? What's on your
good
mind?
Good morning, Fred.
Doctor, I'm a mental health social worker, and it's coming around about something called amotivational disorder, where what we're being told is that over decades and decades and decades of marijuana use, people become lethargic, isolating, and I wanted to find out if that's true.
Yes, absolutely. And so here's the message the clues that we are getting coming out of this new administration at the federal level, because it's marijuana. You've touched on marijuana, decades of inappropriate marijuana use, unintended consequences, meaning that you made marijuana a felony. Even getting caught with a small amount of possession, you get caught speeding, and now they've searched your pockets, and now they've found a gram of marijuana, and now you are a felon. The consequences of that risk means that they drove the potency of THC extremely high. That's not a pun. And even Robert F. Kennedy has already touched on this, and this is the signal that he wants to look at this concern related to these high-potency THCs. If we consider that marijuana as an original plant was only less than 4% THC, 4%, those NIDA cigarettes, those NIDA marijuana joints I talked about in the 1980s were 2% THC. So this psychosis issue is a concern, because especially in our young men population, young men from 21 to approximately 35, early mid 30s, these are the individuals who have been typically the population at risk for cannabis use disorder, because of their demographics. They have had access to this high potency. The dopamine, I see that your question is about dopamine regulation. This is the same effect that they get from the doping relationship through the dopamine receptor. What we recommend and what the science has borne out is CBD. CBD sits in the dopamine receptor and it displaces THC. It displaces everything that could be reactive to that dopamine receptor. In fact, a couple years ago, I did a 4-hour training session, CEU session, to the Virginia Association of Addiction Professionals, and I emphasized that CBD can not only be used to prevent the dopamine reward and pleasure-seeking behaviors associated with addiction, but in the presence of THC, CBD sits in that CB1, the cannabinoid 1 receptor, and it displaces a tight seat, a tight fit for the THC in that receptor, and therefore it attenuates or lessens. So what we typically recommend, and I do treat and have worked with many substance users who are either using alcohol, tobacco, or cannabis and coming to me and saying, I'm using way too much. Can you help me cut back? We recommend, we started about 300 milligrams of CBD per day, either in a divided dose twice daily at 150, but eventually the CBD disrupts that relationship between the dopamine receptor as well as the THC receptor that we call cannabinoid 1, helping to lessen the symptoms of withdrawal. At the same time, we're reducing anxiety, we're reducing depression, we're reducing agitation, we're helping for relaxation and better sleep, and this is a quality of life issue. So CBD, the non-intoxicating, non-impairing compound coming from cannabis, is where we see addiction science moving.
What do you think, Fred?
Well, that sounds good. Can I ask a follow-up question?
Absolutely.
Sure, and I don't want to give you a short trip. We're just running out of time, so make it snappy if you could. All right?
Real quick, what we're seeing is after about 15 or 20 years, some of the clients in their late 30s and 40s that have used marijuana for a couple of decades end up getting schizophrenia.
That's right.
Is there any match for that?
CBD. That is absolutely true, because we're changing the connections in the brain. It's all about the neurotransmissions, and CBD helps to reverse that as well.
Okay, so my clients that are in their 40s and 50s, if they took CBD, they could go back. They could get their health back.
That's a possibility, absolutely. And that's one of the things that we're looking at for the non-THC compounds, such as CBC, CBDV, that we use in autism. These are where we're looking at that neuroprotective side of the patent. These cannabinoids cause neuroregeneration. They regrow nerves.
Okay. Dr. D, would you be okay with me calling you later in the week and getting more information?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let me give everybody a phone number, a plug for that, and then I think we're going to have to wind it up. Our new phone number is area code 252-340-3557. I'm trying to read that like Lee. 252-340-3557. So, yes, give us a call. I'll be happy to talk to you.
Good question, Fred. Thank you very much for joining the show. We appreciate that. That number, the new location for Hemp Haven Wellness, 252-340-3557. Dr. D will be at 726 Caratoke Highway in Moyock, North Carolina, and she'll be there today, 11 to 3, so go see her.
One more time in Chesapeake.
And that's
with Mary
right.
Ellen.
And today's your last day to go in Chesapeake as well, at 480 Kempsville Road in Chesapeake. And, well, we're less than a month away now from Hemp Haven and Chesapeake closing. One door closes, another opens.
In a much friendlier space.
And a bigger and better one at that. Check out the website. Of course, you can still order online from Dr. D and reach her that way. HempHavenWellness.com is her website. And then the podcast, Cannabis Nurse Truths, new episodes every Wednesday at CannabisNurseTruths.com and wherever you get your podcasts.
Wonderful.
I guess that's it then, Dr.
Yes, we'll be here one more month. Well, I'm here again next month, but next month this time, it'll be our last Chesapeake day, and then we are heading south.
And we'll continue to hear from you here on WNIS. You're not leaving us.
No. I've been 3 years on WNIS. I'm very happy about that. Wow.
We are too. Dr. Denise Foster, HempHavenWellness.com.
Thanks, everyone.
The preceding program was sponsored and paid for by Hemp Haven, who's entirely responsible for its content.
And if you're trying to make it, they only push you aside. They really don't have nowhere to go. Ask them where they're going, they don't know.